battles upon battles in Baku. Welcome to the Forecast F1 podcast. As always, you have myself, Samantha, and Anton here. And joining us this weekend is returning guest, Tracy Sambu. Tracy, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Samantha. I'm glad to be here again.
We're very much glad to have you. And what a weekend. I mean, we seem to say that quite often enough, but this year there has been no shortage of excitement each and every single weekend. I'm fairly certain, Anton, we were talking at the end of the last episode saying that typically Baku isn't too exciting, but I guess we can definitely correct ourselves, can't we?
Yeah, I think it's a funny thing with Baku because we tend to get or very exciting races or relatively boring ones that don't seem to be middle way. I think this one was definitely on the exciting side of the spectrum. I had a great weekend watching this race, and I'm very glad we're here all together to talk about it a little bit. Tracy, just to start it off with, what would you rate this this weekend from 1 to 10?
I would personally say this is one of the most exciting weekends we've had in a while. I'd give it a solid 8.5 because it gave us everything. It gave us crashes, it gave us changing positions, it even gave us a new championship lead. So it's top notch. It's one of the best races we've had in a while.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a solid rating, I think.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think also, you know, we saw, in my opinion, probably the best drive that Oscar has ever put out. I think that was his best drive since he's joined Formula One, and that was quite a fantastic race. And not just for him, but even Leclerc was very good. So I can't wait to talk about it. I guess we should dive in, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. I think we're all ready. Yeah. well, like you're saying, I mean, especially the race was very exciting, but I think it's good to go back a little bit and talk first about the start of the weekend. We had, we had three practice sessions that were interesting to the extent that actually was very difficult to really make out a lot of things on the long runs that the teams had made. They weren't very long at all. It was difficult to really see what tire degradation was. At the end of the Friday, when we had to make our picks, I think it was still very difficult to tell which car would perform. And actually, the Saturday also didn't help much because FP3 was relatively moist. Track temperature was super low, so that wasn't really representative of anything. So I guess it was altogether quite a tricky weekend to predict. And going into qualifying, I think, we've seen Charles Leclerc on pole for the past 3 years. So I think all of us knew what he would be capable of, whether we'd be able to repeat such a outstanding lap. We didn't know, but I think we can conclude that not much has changed in that regard, Sam.
No, not at all. I mean, he has consistently done well. I think, like you were saying, this is his fourth pole position in a row at this track. So fantastic result for him overall, and a little bit of a surprising one for others, wasn't it? I would say if we enter just starting with Q1, it was definitely a big surprise to see Lando out in Q1. And I believe that he ran wide on the turn there, and then after that there was a yellow flag in the final sector, so that pretty much was basically it for his final lap.
Yeah, that was actually surprising for me. I was expecting a very good lap from Lando during that final lap for him, but that yellow flag really messed him up, as well as he had a big overturn in one of the corners, in one of the corners, and it affected his lap time. But he did well in the race. He was able to compensate for his mistake yesterday, so good for him as well.
Yeah, tough weekend for Lando to start with, but I think you summarized it quite well. He was able to turn around and actually scoring more points than Verstappen did. So altogether in the championship, that also, and like you already mentioned when we started this podcast, McLaren now for the Constructors' Championship overtakes Red Bull. But going back to that qualifying session, not only was Norris a surprise, I think what was also a big surprise was how well the Williamses turned up. I think we've already seen in the past couple of races that they, with their update, well, the update of several updates that they had, for which they were first disqualified a couple of races ago, but I think we already saw Albon performing very well last race, and actually Colapinto did too, didn't qualify very high, but had a good race. This time out, they both qualified, they both entered into Q3, and Colapinto even put it on a higher spot than Albon, who had a, well, a very peculiar incident with his with the air box still on his car going out on the last bit of the session in Q3. That was it was nail biting actually, because I was afraid that it was going to be red flagged and we wouldn't get to see anyone turn in some new flying laps. So in the end, that was handled by basically Alex just pushing that piece off the car so that the marshal could take it from the road, not from the car, and everyone was able to set a last qualifying lap. But yeah, like we mentioned, Leclerc, he was already on provisional pole after his first flying lap, but he only improved his time. And yeah, I think he but yeah, I'm digressing. I was gonna say actually that how good that result was for Williams.
Yeah, it was a fantastic result. I think for them as well, it was just probably a reaffirmation that the decision made sense in taking Colapinto. They may even be questioning if they should have done it a little bit earlier, considering the result over this weekend. But definitely a bizarre incident with the airbox that was left on Albon's car. I'm just not quite sure how you would seem to miss that, but it was. And he was still able to come out, and at least they both drivers finish in the top 10. So we can take that at least for the race moving forward. I would say also from Q3, or just the end result there, Perez had a stronger finish than we have seen him recently, finishing qualifying over Max in fourth. So that was a much better position for him to start with going into this Sunday. And I would also say that, you know, we were seeing, unfortunately, a little bit of Mercedes on the back step right now. They had recently such a strong run, and that has faltered a little bit. It seems like they're having some complications with the car, don't you think?
Yeah, I actually agree with you on that point. I feel like Mercedes have been doing so well in the previous races in the second half of the season. However, this weekend, I 100% question most of the decisions that were made, especially when it comes to Hamilton. This was the first time that he had done well or much better than the other races when it comes to qualifying, yet they decided to make the decision to change his PU. It did not make any sense, and it did not even translate in the track today. So that was a bit of a question for me when it comes to Mercedes. But nonetheless, at least they were able to get both of the drivers in the top 10 and score some points. But it was still a very, very suspicious, and I wouldn't like that as a Mercedes fan. That was a bad choice for them this weekend.
Yeah, I haven't really looked into the reason why they did it, but I guess there was something that I didn't trust in one of the power unit elements. That would be the only reason to change it, because he, like you were saying, he qualified seventh, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, yes, I mean, that was a bit of a surprise. Talking about surprises, we mentioned one of the rookies, Colapinto, but mm-hmm. Biermann also qualified ahead of Hülkenberg, who I would say on average isn't the worst qualifier on the field. So that was also a very, very impressive result. He wasn't even happy with himself. I think he felt that he still made a couple of mistakes on that last little lap in Q2 and could have actually made Q3. But I think very exciting and a very good sign towards the whole field that actually, you know, teams sometimes seem to be slightly cautious with putting F2 drivers in their car. But I think during the season, I think we've seen several examples of F2 drivers actually being able to take on the challenge, and I think today was another or this weekend was another good example of that, both for Colapinto and Behrmann. And actually Behrmann also finished in the points, but Yeah, I think we'll get into that a little bit later, but let's move on to the Sunday, because I think there's like Sam, like you said in the beginning of this podcast, I think there's a lot to talk about, and
so
I think
much.
It would only be fair to begin to talk about the start of the race, Tracy.
Yes, the start of the race, beginning. I was expecting so much chaos in turn one, can't lie. It went on smoothly, having the lead with Piastri. That was I love that he is taking his pace despite coming into the weekend expecting team orders. As I was saying to one of my friends in the groups, there was no way Piastri was finishing ahead of Norris this weekend, considering they were genuinely supposed to be making team orders for the team. But I'm so glad that he's able to take his pace and charge ahead of when given the opportunity, which was nice. I also I'm surprised by Ferrari's pace this few races. It seems they've gotten the car right. It seems like they know what they're doing with their car. They're making the right calls when it comes to pace, which is really nice.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see that on the first stint of both Ferraris, actually, they seem to be doing very, very well in the mediums. I think they had decent pace, and like you said, Piastri had a good start. He was able to keep up most of the time with Leclerc, but then actually when they went to go on their stints on the hard tire, things completely changed around, and the Ferrari was... Well, I don't want to say they were nowhere. I mean, they were still quite decent and still better than perhaps I would have thought. Although I think there's a trend occurring where you can see that actually in these type of tracks, I mean, we know that Monaco was a good race for them. Then I thought that perhaps Monza, a very different circuit, was another win for Leclerc. So I was feeling that those were just two one-offs. But I do think, looking at this track, that actually because Baku is pretty varied in its track laid out. I mean, it has a very tight and twisty section in the middle sector of the race. But it also has very fast corners, like 90 degrees corners. And it seems like the Ferrari performs well on that, which is actually interesting, because going into Singapore, we're going to see another track that's pretty tight and twisty, and I think very resembling in certain ways of Monaco and Baku. So, we saw that Piastri was on that second stint was. I don't know. It was not only the overtake. I think the overtake itself was very exciting, Sam, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was a fantastic overtake on his end. He seems to really be confident when it comes to the late braking. And that was, once again, an overtake that was a confident one that we've seen, where he was able to time it well, get ahead. And also, I think that there were a few things leading up to that that benefited him. Norris did hold back Perez for a little bit, and they were able to make a quick pit stop, and that gave him a little bit more of an advantage coming out and give him the ability to kind of warm the tires up and then make the dive that he did. And so I think that really one of the reasons why I said in the beginning that I believe this is Piastri's best race that he's had is because his first maiden win was a little bit different, and we saw a side of him this weekend where we were able to see everything, all the qualities that make a really fantastic driver, you know, whether or not they're being bold on their overtakes, well-timed on their strategies, and then also effective under pressure. I mean, it's not easy to have somebody like Leclerc behind you and to be able to manage that and also do it defensively and be able to defend in the way that he was able to do that is just I think that was a fantastic performance that we saw.
Completely. He was able to take control very well and perform as much better than most people expect of this weekend, because during the practice sessions and the qualifying, it seemed as though this was not going to be one of the strong tracks for McLaren, but he was able to get over that and perform really well in the first lap.
I think it was interesting what we saw in the cool down room, where he mentioned that he himself thought it was 50-50 when he made that move on Leclerc, whether he was going to make it or not. But yeah.
And it only doubles down on the previous. You remember the previous track where he was able to overtake Lando after the first turn. Like, it only doubles down to show that he's willing to fight for his position regardless of what's going on in that corner. He has a good control of the car to be able to tell just when to take the turn and when it's risky or not.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, it's, I think, one of the main criticisms so far for Piastri was that he was not, that he has some more difficulty managing his tires than Norris seems to be able to do. But I think on this track, that's definitely something that's not easy. And well, he wins the race, so I don't think you can say anything about that.
Yeah. We also had that crash that costed Tsunoda his race this weekend, where he had his side pods crashed, I think.
Right, yeah.
Was it Stroll who knocked him?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because on the replays, I couldn't really tell how much space Stroll actually still had into that corner. I was hoping to see an image, perhaps like an image from the air where you could see the corner a little bit better. So it was difficult for me to tell whether Stroll had nowhere else to go, or whether he left his left front tire standing and hit Tsunoda. What was it, clumsy, or didn't he have any space, Sam? Or let's get the Canadian expert in on this.
Well, I would say the same thing as you. I think that it's a little bit tough to kind of see at that point of the race. It was there was so much going on,
yes,
in different parts of the race that it was very hard to be able to tell. And I think for a lot of us, I didn't even realize that Tsunoda had any damage until it was later on when the car was retired and then you saw the chunk that was taken out. But I think that although he said from some of the things that I've reviewed, a lot of reports are saying that that although he said that Tsunoda closed the door, that they don't think the door was really ever open. So that's some feedback, but whether or not that's true or not, I think that we'd have to probably have a better angle to really determine for ourselves. So unfortunately for Tsunoda, it wasn't a great race. I think altogether for Red Bull, and when I say Red Bull,
he's been quite unlucky.
Yeah, and I think for Red Bull in general, I mean, Racing Bulls, they did not have a great weekend again, out of the points. And then you look at Red Bull as well, and it's such a difference in terms of performance that you're seeing. The comparison from the start of the season to where they are now, there's lots of question marks. You could see Max was really struggling once again this weekend with the performance of the car. And I think we're so accustomed to also seeing, he's a fantastic driver, so we see what he maximizes in that Red Bull. I mean, how many times have we seen situations where he potentially was starting further back and then how quickly he can advance and really become competitive? And yet, fast forward to Baku, here's an example. We saw Lando in a position where he's much further on the grid at the start, and he was able to not only advance, but the pace in that McLaren was able to catch up to Max towards the final laps of the race and eventually end up overtaking him. And I think for somebody like Max, who we all know lives and breathes clearly being competitive, that must be very frustrating. Tracy, what are your thoughts when it comes to that?
They came into the weekend, they looked like they had fixed some issues, but clearly the adaptations that they made didn't really translate. What I can say is I feel for Max. I feel like he deserves a much faster car. He is used to winning, but we remember the accident that they had early in the year that affected their budget with Perez, and I feel like we are now kind of seeing the impact of that crash, because their budget is sort of strained. And Unfortunately for the fans of Red Bull, it's about to get worse before it gets better. And it's even worse with the crash today, because it really is affecting their budget and it's affecting the kind of upgrades that they can bring. But I feel like with Max, if he keeps his head focused on the game, because he's the kind of driver who's just as great a driver as he is in the car, he can be able to fight back, but he also needs a good car. So I don't know, it's a bit unfortunate for the teams, but we'll see how it goes. I don't expect them to have a better race this in Singapore, because it's also another fast track. But after we do have a break after Singapore, so maybe if they do something with their car, there might be a little hope for them. But if they're not careful, they are on a path where they can lose the championship, and it will be really unfortunate.
I think you're making some good points there. I think also Horner himself and Helmut Marko, they also hinted towards Austin as being the race where they might be able to catch back some of the gap that has been created by McLaren. And I think you're making another good point that during the practice sessions, I felt too, also that Red Bull had made some changes to the floor. They made a couple of different setup, and I felt that actually they were doing quite well in those practice sessions. And I think both of you did too, because I'm looking at your predictions here, but we'll get to that a little bit later.
Yeah, how you make P1.
Yeah, no, and I was also really doubting whether to put him back on. And I mean, that already tells you that, it looked like they were getting a little bit back at it at the beginning of the weekend. But Sam, as you were saying, in the end, if you look at the race, with Norris finishing ahead of Verstappen, starting so much further back, of course they were on different strategies as well, and I think that the hard medium one stop was definitely a good strategy. If you look at some of the other drivers that went with, well, actually the only real driver that also went with that was who finished in the top 10 was Albon, but he also had a great race. I thought ahead of the start, when we saw on which tires every driver was, I thought that a couple of others would also go with that, because we had Gasly, Ricardo, Joe, and Ocon also starting on hards. And actually, Joe did do that strategy, but I don't know if you guys saw what what Gasly, Ricardo, and Ocon did, but they basically drove 50 laps of the race on a hard tire. And then in the last lap, switched to softs. Well, actually, Gasly switched on the very last lap, and Ricardo and Ocon switched on lap 49. But that was a bit of a the Albon Australia 2022 strategy, where he scored a point by pitting in the last lap. But that was something alternative, which actually showed that it was possible to drive a really long stint on hard tires. But some were able to execute a little bit better than others. Talking on execution, I think what you mentioned there was, I think it was Sam, you who said it, that Perez seemed to be quite a bit more confident in the Red Bull than Verstappen. But I think, that leads us up to talking a little bit about what happened there at the end of the race. I don't think we can... avoid talking about it. So I want to know from you, Sam, first, how do you feel that, which was judged the racing incident after the race by the stewards, but how was it judged by you?
Well, I think honestly, it's actually quite a tough one. Anytime it's tough, where you really go back and forth and you're trying to scrutinize it, it almost leans more towards a racing incident. And I feel like the more times that I see the replay, the more I actually think that way, because there's two things that I'm looking at when I saw that. First of all, the initial accident itself, I'm pretty sure I woke here in Canada, actually, same for you, Anton. It was 7 a.m. when the race started. So it's early regardless on a Sunday morning to watch that. And I think I woke up all my neighbors because I was not prepared. And I was very, very vocal because I was so surprised that took place. I think leading up to it and what was happening there, it was, I mean, tensions, it was just such a tense moment because you could see leading up to it how close everybody was. And I mean, I did not see it coming, first of all, that Sainz was even in the rear view that closely with Perez, with Leclerc, and with Leclerc trying to chase Piastri all at that one moment. So I think you factor that in, first of all. Then you take a look at the situation that happened right before that, where we saw Leclerc go into a position where he clearly was trying to chase Piastri, but was struggling with that. And as a result, you saw Perez trying to take advantage. You saw signs at that same moment trying to take advantage, and you're also on one of the most difficult turns on the track, but also seemingly seemed to be the turn that everybody was utilizing in those late breaking overtaking moments during the race. So with all of that combined, then you're in a position where both drivers are coming up. It doesn't look like Perez is really giving him much room, but at the same time, if you're thinking about Perez, maybe in terms of being able to see in front of him in a peripheral, like I would argue that it may be a little bit tough. Everything's happening in that moment, and you can clearly see that he's also trying to take Leclerc's racing line. So then at the same token, you also see the fact that it was a little bit unusual how Sainz just went very quickly into Perez. But this is why I say, to me, there's a lot of things that I look at a little bit scratch heads, kind of like when Sainz came out of that and sounded like he just woke up. He's like, I don't understand what happened. And that's kind of how I was left. I kind of don't understand. I have a lot more of an uncertainty as to how that unfolded directly with the collision, but I can see how it would have gotten to that point prior. So at the end of the day, this long explanation would lead me to with the result of I think it would be classified as a racing incident. But I'm curious to hear both of your thoughts on that.
I think it's a 50-50 chance for me. It did happen very last minute. It did happen in the most unexpected turns. I was not watching like the screen at the time of the crash. So when I suddenly saw that both the Ferrari and the Red Bull car were on the wall, I thought for the first time, I was like thinking maybe it was Perez and Charles. So I was like, what's going on here? What's happening? Why are they on the wall? What happened for this to happen? And then I saw the replay, and I'd say it was a racing incident. Sainz was not expecting the car to turn the way it did. Like, if you're being real, Perez was on his tr on was on his DRS going ahead of him, but the car did take a certain turn that would make me believe Sainz made a mistake, or something happened to Sainz's car that there was nothing he could have done, and he crashed onto Perez's front part of the car. However, I can't necessarily blame Sainz for it because it did seem like it was the car that turned, or he made a turn that was a mistake that can classify as a racing incident, but I'd put the blame on Sainz, not necessarily Perez. What do you think, Anton?
If I'm looking at it, I'm also fine with classifying it as a racing incident. I actually believe it's a little bit more on Perez rather than Sainz, because if I look at it, I would say that yeah, Sainz doesn't he, his corner's not perfect, so he's a little bit on the outside there, and being there, he wants to go a little bit back to the middle of the track and be in the slipstream of Leclerc ahead of him. So yeah, he's not driving in a straight line, but slightly skewed. But he doesn't make any sudden movements or anything up until the moment where they touch. So his steering wheel is straight, even though he's driving in a straight line. It's just not. It's going slightly from the outside towards the middle of the track. Perez, on the other hand, drives a straight line. But yeah, he has a total view of what's happening. So because Sainz is ahead of him, it's much easier for him to judge where that car is going. And you can see already like a couple of you know, moments ahead of the crash, before the crash, you can see that Sainz is taking, is going towards the middle of the track. So Perez would have very easily be able to avoid it, I think, and I think he should have. I mean, Sainz is still ahead of him, so there's no reason for Sainz. It's not like he has to drive on the outside of the track. He can, well, I don't want to say he can go wherever he wants, but as long as it's not a very sudden movement, I think what Sainz does is not wrong, and Perez could have avoided it in the end. Yeah, but you know, it's a very unfortunate coming together. It happens in a split second, and it has very big consequences. And I don't think any of them really did it on purpose. I mean, I think both of them would have been very happy finishing on the podium if they could have. I think Perez had a great race up until that point. I think P3 would have been very deserved for him for this weekend. I think he had a very good weekend. And so he of course he doesn't do it purposely, but yeah, it looked a little bit clumsy, and it also took a little bit of the attention away from the Piastri win, because I think if that wouldn't have happened, I think everybody would have been fully focused on Piastri winning the race. But now, yeah, a lot of things were happening at the same time. I was expecting a red flag to be called straight away, which didn't happen. At first, nothing seemed to happen. Then there was a yellow flag, then a virtual safety car. Which so the race ended in the end under a virtual safety car. So, a lot of discussion at the end of a race win for Piastri, just as we had last time. But this time, I think a lot of people were wondering last time whether he was so calm on the radio because the win was slightly gifted by McLaren while switching Norris and Piastri. But I think he confirmed this weekend that he's just very calm when he wins a race.
But he definitely is.
Yeah, but we can also agree that despite the crash, the racing around that period was amazing. It was what everyone was bent for.
I agree. Because
we were on our toes. We were sort of like wondering, is it going to be a McLaren win or a Red Bull win, or Charles was going to overtake Piastri for a while, like for most part of the second. After they'd switched their tires to go hard, for most part of the race, you could feel as though the win was for either of the three people, of the three drivers, and that racing was immaculate. Like, I can't lie, I've not seen such a racing spirit, because we were all on the edge of the seats, sort of wondering who's going to pass who, what time were they going to pass each other. The DRS train, for most part of the race, was within the seconds, and that sort of like made the race very interesting. And if it was not for the crash, it would have turned out to be one really good race results for both of them, because at the end of the day, Red Bull would have gotten points, and the gap for the championship could not have gone to be that wide as it is, because now it's at the 26 points, and Ferrari could have made improvements in their championship constructors. So that race really did spoil a lot of people's expectations, but nonetheless, it was nice seeing it. It was nice racing. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think the gap is 20 points right now, but you're right, because of the crash, the gap is much larger than it would have been if Perez would have finished the race over there. But you're right, it was a very exciting race, even without the crash. If that wouldn't have happened, it would still have been a great race, because you're right. For the whole duration of the race, it was a very interesting battle, and you couldn't tell who was going to win it for a very long period of time. And it would still have been a great race if that safety car... Well, actually, it was a virtual safety car. So, Sam, the last safety car that we've had in Formula 1 is still the one that we've seen live. Actually, we saw two.
We did.
I think.
That was an exciting race as well.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's been a long time since we saw just now.
Sorry.
No. But you're right. It has actually been a while, and I didn't really think about that until you've mentioned it now. And I think also it's interesting because so many teams, depending on the track or of course the climate, they tend to strategize around the hope that there is a safety car. I think that in some of the strategy with Lando, there were some parts where they were kind of hoping for a safety car as well. But we haven't seen it. Surprisingly, we haven't seen it on some tracks that arguably you would expect to see a safety car on. So I do find that an interesting situation. But I was also just going to say that I thought the exact same thing as you when it came to the fact that you never knew who was going to win the race. And I think this is, I think that's also what's really made this season so exciting is, yes, the wins and those that have won. I mean, we've seen so many different drivers that have won a race, which already is exciting. But I think further to that, this is one of the most competitive seasons that I can remember because of the fact that so many of the races, you truly don't know who's going to win for a large portion of it. Last year, it was a different tune. We did see a Red Bull dominance. We saw a Max dominance. We saw situations that were more questions as to who is going to top the podium with Max as opposed to who was going to win. And now we're just seeing situations where you truly have no idea what's going to happen. And this race was one that definitely exceeded that. And yeah, I think if I were to take anything from this race as the most thrilling part was the fact that there was just so much going on and there were so many battles happening. And at the same time, the battle to secure P1 was a fantastic part that never seemed to let up and that showed so many great facets of strengths amongst drivers themselves and what they excel in. And I think at the end, I mean, it definitely was exciting. Seeing before that crash, seeing even Sainz be a part of that, Perez, Leclerc, Piastri, I mean, you're on the edge of your seat, and that's what you want as a fan. You want to be on the edge of your seat. This is racing, and you want to see them race. So I was very, very pleased with that.
I wanted to say we can also go back and say how Albon also affected most of the results, because for most part of the beginning part, when he was holding back Lando, I was so frustrated. I just wanted him to pit, change his cars, and let the cars pass so that we can have more action in the front. I was so frustrated every other time you could see Norris was getting closer to passing him and couldn't. The gap between Albon and was it Perez was increasing instead of decreasing. Between Sainz and Albon, the gap was increasing, and I didn't want that. I wanted more people at the front. I wanted Lando to enter the chat. I wanted Sainz to be there. I wanted Perez. I wanted everybody to be fighting for the top, for the podium, and Albon was holding back.
Yeah, but actually what you're saying there is interesting, because, yeah, Norris couldn't pass Albon, but at least those were on the same tire strategies. Those were both on old hard tires. Behind Norris at that point in the race was Verstappen, who was on much newer hard tires, and he couldn't pass Norris, while I would have expected that tire difference would have allowed him to, but that's a good point in the race where it shows how much better actually the McLaren is at this point than the Red Bull. And Sam, you just now mentioning Norris waiting for a safety car made me realize that was very likely the strategy of Gasly, Ricciardo, and Ocon that I mentioned, who pitted on the last lap. They were probably just, you know, holding out, waiting for something to happen in the latter part of the race in order to make advantage of that, change tires under a safety car. And yeah, well, in the end, we did get that safety car, but we got it very late into the race. And actually, that also influenced, because Verstappen had a big gap to Alonso. So he pitted for soft tires as well to get that fastest lap. But because we had a yellow flag, and after that a virtual safety car, he couldn't really go for that. And in the end, Norris finished with the fastest lap. So that gets Norris another point additional. So the gap is only been narrowed with 3 points, but I guess that's still better for the championship if the result would have been the other way around, if Verstappen would have finished ahead of Norris. So I don't know, altogether I guess not a very big leap for Lando, but I think all in all, taking into account how unfortunate he was on the Saturday, I think he can go home with somewhat of a good feeling about his Sunday.
Oh, most definitely.
He had such a lucky weekend. Speaking of luck, we also need to appreciate the kind of luck that Mercedes got this weekend. I was not expecting Hamilton to get to the top 10 at all. He was struggling for most part of the race. He sounded frustrated on the radio for most part as well. So seeing him get P9, not a great position, but would take it. A win is a win. And same case for George. I was expecting George to crash this weekend after the mess he had during practice. I was really expecting him to have a crash. But he got lucky and got a podium, so that's good. That's good news for us.
Yeah, what a surprise. I mean, for him, I can only imagine being in the cockpit there and then all of a sudden realizing that you're going to be on the podium in third. That was probably I think he was probably the most surprised out of everybody.
He did not see that coming at all.
No, and you mentioned Hamilton, but also Behrman got points because of it. Because, yeah, if that crash wouldn't have happened, Hamilton and Behrman would have finished 11th and 12th. Colapinto, regardless, would have finished in the points. I don't know exactly what happened because a couple of laps before the end, he was still behind Hülkenberg. I don't know what issue Hülkenberg had, but Colapinto overtook him. And actually, in the end, the Williams team scores 10 points with 6 points for Albon and 4 points for Colapinto. So I think, given the position where they are in the Constructor Championship, this is a great step ahead for them. And I think one of the first weekends since a long time where they were able to string together a good Saturday and a good Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think we need to appreciate Behrman's achievements. He's only had 2 races in F1, and in both cases he's been able to score points, so he has a good future in F1.
Well, he's the first driver to ever score points for 2 different teams on his first 2 races, so that's one for the books too.
Pretty fantastic result. And oh, I was just going to say, pretty fantastic result for him, and hopefully a foreshadowing to next season when he is full-time an F1 driver.
There was also another great achievement that what happened this weekend. Hamilton got to finally complete 100,000 kilometers in F1, so that's nice.
No, right. I missed that stat, but that's yeah. How many kilometers has has Alonso driven now?
Well,
it has to be more.
Well, you know what's interesting is one thing that that just reminded me, because my mind immediately went to, I wonder how many Alonso has as well. But one thing that we didn't even mention that probably is the biggest news this entire week,
right,
was Newey confirming that Adrian Newey confirming that he is going to be with Aston Martin. And I think that, I mean, for Aston Martin, I think that they have made some fantastic, solid, foundational decisions to strengthen that team for the next several years. And I mean, being able to snag Adrian Newey is definitely a feather in the cap, wouldn't you say, Anton?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think there's no reason yet for me to do away with some of my Aston Martin merch. I think this is very, you know, this is very exciting. And of course, we're going to wait and see. Because officially he will only be able to work on the cars starting from I think March or April 2025. Although of course,
right,
I'm pretty sure he still has Dan Fallow's phone number in his WhatsApp. But anyway, yeah, no, I mean it's very exciting news, and I think you're hitting the nail on the head saying that they're lining up a pretty impressive management team and big names, and well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's see where it leads us. But yeah, I'm getting very excited, and especially since, I mean, I know that in general, I tend to say that I want to see all the drivers make space for rookies on the grid. But yeah, I still want to see an Alonso win before before he retires. So
you don't say, huh?
Yeah, but I don't want to jinx it either. Yeah, let's just see where this goes. And but it is exciting news. It definitely is. And on the other hand, yeah, we all already knew that Newey was going to leave Red Bull. But yeah, I'm also curious to see where that team is headed, because yeah, with all the with everything that happened at the beginning of the season, you know, internally, and now what's happening on the track. It's I don't know, it's raising a lot of question marks, at least for me. And you know, I don't mind it. I mean, actually, I think that what's now going to, you know, all of this is going to lead to a very, very interesting season next year as well, which I can only hope for. So yeah, let's see.
I think Aston Martin is making some really, I think the strategy in mind for them is preparing as well for 2026. And I think that with the additions that they've put in place, regardless, I mean, they're really giving themselves a lot of opportunity and strength to go into 2026 when things are going to be changing quite considerably with the car. I mean, Adrian is the ace that you want to have when you enter a year like that with everything that and the modifications that need to be done. And so right now I would say they are definitely the ones that probably have the strongest foundation going when it comes to 2026. We'll see, you know, time will ultimately tell. But I think that they have, I think both themselves and Ferrari have made some really great decisions this year when it comes to the future of those teams.
Yeah, absolutely. Lawrence has been making such great deals, and I'm sure it's about to get worse. It's about to get worse for other teams, but better for him, because I'm pretty sure he won't stop signing just now that he has Newey. He'll also go for other better engineers and sort of like make sure the team does perform well when it comes to the part of the 2025 and the new 2026 season. And I don't know if he will be able to let go of Lance, but we'll see how that will go, and we'll see how Aston Martin will be shaking the F1 scene in 2026. Definitely the biggest.
Well, it's an interesting observation about Lance, because it does give me a thought as to the driver pairing, because at the end of the day, you're going to have drivers that naturally are going to want to be on a high performing team and a solid team. And if Aston Martin is securing this and they show consistently that they have the performance in the car, you're going to have drivers that, depending on their contracts, are going to be more inclined. You know, if you're in situations where maybe your team isn't doing so well as it did before, and you start looking, what is the team that you want to go towards? You want to go to the one that's going to provide the biggest opportunity for you to become a world champion. So I question in the future, are they going to hold on to Lance? I mean, yes, that is his son, but in terms of performance, if they had the ability to snag somebody that is that can guarantee them a higher chance of winning the Constructors' Championships or the Driver Championship, would they consider that later on? I don't know.
Yeah, but
we'll have to see.
I think that the sole purpose of that team's existence is to make Lance a world champion, and I know we all laugh about it. But I, you know, if you keep that in mind, that's really Lawrence's goal, then once you get to the point where actually the car is going to be competitive, and let's assume that it will be, so then if the sole purpose is to make Lance a world champion, then once you start to get closer to it, you let him go. I don't think that's going to happen, which is actually very interesting, because if you want to if you want Lance to become a champion, then you need to have a second driver that's you know, below his standard, because I'm pretty sure you can give team orders to Fernando Alonso, but once that car becomes a championship winning car, I don't think he's really going to listen to it. But of course, the other option would be to, let's say, have Alonso drive that car for half a season, outscore Lance, have Lance be second in the championship, and then just fire Alonso at mid-season, and that way you can, you can make sure Lance becomes a champion, or maybe give the seat to Sargent or someone like that. But or Latifi, I mean, he's Canadian after all.
Oh, jeez. I like your thought process there, Anton. I always err on the side of chaos. I appreciate that.
Imagine a championship-winning car with Lance Stroll and Nicholas Latifi in it. I mean, it would make for great races, I think.
Yeah, it would.
Look, as a Canadian, I would love to see a Canadian on the podium. I would love to see a Canadian win a championship. There's no doubt about that. The logical or realistic side of my brain would tell me that that would probably be a dream in the case of those two drivers. But hey, I could be wrong, right?
We'll see. 2025 and 2026 will be some of the most interesting years in F1.
Right. So once again, we had a really strong weekend with predictions. Anton, why don't we start with that? How many people played this weekend?
I was going to say strong. I thought you were talking about us personally, because I don't think it was a particularly strong weekend on our side.
Well, we definitely weren't.
Yeah. we'll get to
definitely
that.
Not.
We'll get to that. But player count wise, we had 1,120 players, which is a new record. Actually, I got to correct. Last time I mentioned we had 1,117 players. I miscounted by one. It was 1,118. So that means we have two more players this weekend, which means that's another record. So I'm very happy with that. And before we go and look into some of the stats, I want to hear from the both of you. How many people do you think had a podium exactly predicted, like how it finished? So with Piastri in P1, Leclerc in P2, and P3 Russell. Sam?
I'm going to actually say nobody.
Yeah, Sam, I don't think anyone got that.
You're both right. Nobody got that. So actually, we usually use that as the the one that gets closest to this prediction is allowed to choose whether to start in the quiz or not. So that means I'm going to ask you, and let's see who gets closest to the average score this weekend. Sam, what do you think out of the 1,120 people was what was their average score this weekend?
I'm going to go fairly low, considering nobody chose the correct podium. I'm going to say 32.
I'm going to say 27.
All right. Well, that means Tracy is closer to the right answer. It was actually the lowest average score that we've seen this season. The previous lowest average score, where do you think that was scored, Sam?
Oh, I believe, was it Australia?
Yeah, you're right. That was Australia. That was 26.3. That was Sainz's win. This time we had an average score of 23.5. So even lower than Australia. Yeah.
That's so low.
And it is very low indeed. The lowest score this weekend by anyone was 3.0. Actually, it's interesting. If you look at the top 20, there were a couple of people who are currently ranked in the top 20 who scored below 10 points. So a lot of shifts in the rankings, but we'll get to that. Let's first get to the podium of this weekend's race. On the third spot from Turkey is Mustafa Selçuk, and he scored 63.3 points. On the second place is Tony Muema from Kenya, your fellow country member, 63.9 points for him. And winning this weekend's Forecast F1 competition is Eduardo Reguera from Nicaragua. He scored 68.5 points.
Good for them. Congratulations.
Pretty decent scores considering the results.
Mm-hmm. They made really
Definitely,
bold.
Yeah.
predictions.
But if you look at the scores, actually they drop down pretty quickly from the from those first first few spots. That also means we don't have any new high score set. But what I also want to mention is that we're now collaborating with DRS Lane, which is a shop, F1 related shop in Lebanon. And from this race weekend onward, the highest scoring Lebanese player in forecast gets a $10 voucher in the shop. So we're also going to look at the highest scoring Lebanese player in the podcast, in the race. Well, in the game, but we're going to mention him in the podcast. So the highest scoring Lebanese player this weekend on P6, actually, so fairly high, was Marc Jawar, who actually lives in Montreal, Sam.
Yeah, that's right. Congratulations, Marc. That's a nice way to win the first voucher.
That's right. He actually only outscored the next highest scoring Lebanese player with 0.4 points. That player finished on P7. That was Said. But congratulations to Mark. First voucher goes to you. And actually, looking at our top 20, there were a couple of first timers. We had the first Syrian player that finished in the top 20. That is Naji Shenekchi, and actually also living in Canada, Sam. So a lot of Canadian high scoring players. But they don't all play for the Canadian nationality. Anyway, we also had with Eduardo Regueira winning the weekend, that's also the highest scoring, highest finishing Nicaraguan in forecast. Actually, the previous highest was a P2 in Silverstone this year for Alan Brito. So, already talking a little bit about the different countries. We look at the top 20.
Sorry.
I think Tracy just broke a glass.
it's okay.
Looking at the top 20 countries, we see that the only movement there is that Czech Republic overtakes France for P8. And the country with the most places gained, actually there's three different countries that all gained 7 spots. Nicaragua moves up to P84. Ghana moves to P119 and Estonia moves to P132. And if you wonder, we now have 143 different countries in the game because we had players from three different new countries. Well, actually, all of these three countries have had players before in forecast, but not during this season. So we had Ali Kadem, who joined from Bahrain. We had Alexei Gruevski, who joined from Northern Macedonia, and we had Abdurrahman Diallo from Senegal, who joined. So from those three countries, we had our first new player this season. And that actually brings me to another question, Sam, that I've been asking in the previous podcast as well to you. From which country do you think we had the most players in the game this weekend?
I'm going to stick to Kenya.
You're right, Tracy. Again, we've seen a trend over the last... Yeah,
I was right again.
Yeah, that's a recent trend in the game. We had 89 people from Kenya play. Actually, on P2 was Lebanon. It seems like with the new voucher, people from Lebanon are joining. Well, we already had a decent amount of Lebanese people playing the game, but there was 56 this race weekend, and we had 51 people from Argentina who saw their first driver since 1982 that scored points in a race. So that's a long time coming.
Very exciting.
Yeah, we're gonna have a look in a bit how many people went with Cola Pinto on that P8 spot, but we'll see in a bit. Let's first look at before we look at our scores, let's also look at the championship. And Rosario Finzi from France, who's in P1, scored very little points, only 16.4. So he sees his lead shrinking a little bit towards Sumit Jaiswal from India in P2, who scored 37.3 points. So the difference now, Rosario has 884.4 points, and there's a 17-point gap towards P2. And on P3, Annelie Beumer from the Netherlands, who scored a similar point tally as Sumit, with 35.8 points. No changes in the top three. But if we go a little bit further back, we'll see that there was actually quite a lot of changes behind them. But you can see that later on. The scores you can find in the app, the ranking you can find in the app. You can also see some stats on Instagram. So you'll be able to figure out exactly where you are in the ranking. And Sam, Tracy, I think it's also time to look at our scores. Tracy, let's start with you. You already mentioned you went with a Verstappen win. Who did you have on P2 and P3?
I think I had Leclerc P2. That I'm sure that's the only part that I got a point, and I had Norris P3.
That's right, but that's not the only driver that you had actually in the correct spot. You had somebody else in the correct spot too.
Yeah, I had Berman.
Yeah, that's right. You went with a Berman P10, and
wow,
actually you
bold
also went,
and right.
Yeah.
And
I
you
had
also
hopes
went
for
with
him.
Yeah, well, and they came through. And what also came through is actually you had Norris on fastest lap, so you scored that point as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, nice.
So
very nice.
In total, you had 27 points.
Oh.
Not a whole lot, but as you remember, the average was 23.5, so you're scoring above average.
Yeah,
and,
above average.
You finished P366, so not extremely high, but if you take into account that we had 1,120 players, it's also not too bad.
Yeah, I'm proud of that. I'll take that. I was not expecting to get good points this weekend at all, so I'd take that.
It's a good result. You actually, with that, you move up 17 places in the standings. Mm-hmm. You were on P284. You're now on P267. So you're actually the only one out of the three of us that's going anywhere in the championship. Sam and I, not so much. Sam, let's have a look at you first. Although before I say anything negative, you outscored me, so I shouldn't say so much. But what's the podium
nice.
That you went with?
I went with Verstappen win, and I believe I went with Lando Piastri.
That is right. It got you 19.3 points.
Mm. Ouch.
I remember you saying
that's
ouch last
one.
Race as well. But I think you outscored me there too. So again, what am I saying? You finished P701 this weekend. And you dropped from P47 to P56.
Ooh, okay. Well, I mean, it could be worse. Though I kind of say that often.
It can always be worse. Take me for example. I went with a Norris win for Verstappen P2 and Piastri on P3. So that wasn't a very great result for me either.
What was your total points?
And where did that put you?
Where does that put me? Yeah, what I'm actually checking is what is our difference in points right now, because that's not a whole lot. I moved down from P35 to P49, and that means we're not that many spots apart. I'm just checking. So I have a total point tally now of 791, and you, Sam, have 786.4. That's only
so
a difference
close.
Of 4.6 points. Yeah, we're very close together
that's
now.
Close. You're literally one DNF away from passing each other.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is that we always tend to, we kind of laugh about this because there are times where we tend to come out with the same predictions. It's not intentional at all. It just happens. I can just, as a funny memory, like I can remember, Anton, when you were actually here physically for the most recent race, not the most recent race, but the recent Canadian race, the Montreal Grand Prix. And Anton had already made his picks. I went to make mine while we were actually on the subway. And so I did it very spontaneously in the moment, sent the picks. He looks and he laughs, and it turns out we pretty much almost had the identical exact prediction. So it just seems to happen this way. It's not intentional, because I think we're both also very competitive people. We don't like to be the one that's losing. So, but the fact that we are, that are at this point in time in the season, that we're separated by exactly how many points? What's this? 5 points?
4.6. Yeah. Roughly? Yes. Well, let's round it up to 5.
So five points roughly is what's separating us after every single prediction so far this season. Like, that's something.
That's insane.
True, although then again, I mean, it could also gone the, I mean, you know, it would have been a much different result if, because you go for Verstappen win, I went for Norris win, so we could have had like a very big difference if any of the two would have won. But then if you get a completely different podium with Piastri and Leclerc and Russell on it, yeah, then all of a sudden both our predictions suck. I mean, in the end,
true.
It seems like we were performing a lot better when Red Bull was dominating.
I missed those days.
Yeah, well, game-wise, it was a lot easier.
I think a lot of people were performing well.
Yeah, true.
It was one of the best years. You just needed to figure out who's going to win after Max, who's going to be P2 and the rest.
True, yeah. Those days are over. Well, let's see who of you gets to win this weekend's quiz. I remember last time, Tracy, you beat Sam, and we're gonna do a rerun now. So we're gonna predict for every position, final classification position of the drivers, how many people in the game correctly predicted the drivers to finish there. And Tracy, you were closer to the average score. So you can choose either to start or let Sam start with P1, PS3. Well, let me know what you want.
Sam, you can start.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to go with lucky number 13.
I'd go somewhere higher than that. I'd go around 60.
That means first point goes towards Tracy, because it was 43 people, so you're only 17 away.
Ooh.
Oh wow! A lot of people thought PSG was good this weekend. So the next for Nick Clark, we can say, since I was among the people that predicted he'd get the P2 position, I'm going to go for a higher number, and say 222.
I think you're right on a higher number. Especially after the last race in Monza. I'm going to say a little less than you, though. I'm going to say 200.
Means another point in Tracy's direction, because it was 253 people who had Leclerc on P2.
Uh-huh.
Wow. A lot of confidence there.
He's doing well. He has a nice streak going.
Yeah, definitely. He's been finishing on the podium very consistently in the last couple of races. Let's see how confidence was with Russell. Sam on P3.
Oh, I'm going to say one person.
I'd agree. I was going to say around 4. So let's put it at 4.
Well, you're both right that it wasn't a whole lot of people, but still a few more than that. It was 22 people.
Oh, wow.
who had Russell on P3, yeah.
That's more people than you'd expect.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's. I didn't have any of the Mercedeses even close to the podium, so I also wouldn't expect many people to have that. Still, there's always those that go with with something else. P4, Norris, Tracy.
Norris had gone with around 172.
Okay, I'm going to go a little high. I don't know if I should go higher. I'm going to say 180.
Shouldn't have gone higher, Sam. It was lower. It was 155.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, that means actually you've scored 4 points so far, and Sam's got...
Yeah, Tracy's on a roll now.
All right, let's see how many people had Verstappen on P5, Sam.
I'm going to say 87.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say Max, 55.
Well, Sam, there's your first point. It was actually above 100 people. It was 128 people at Verstappen on P5. Yeah, quite a few.
Wow. How often do you hear that? Over 100 people choosing Verstappen P5.
I thought everybody had him in P1, or at least a podium.
Yeah, it's a bit surprising. Is that many people still? How many people went with Alonso on P6, Tracy?
65.
I'm gonna go higher. I'm gonna say 112.
Mm-hmm. Oh no! Don't go higher! Don't go higher! It was lower. It was only 15 people.
15.
Yeah, 1-5.
Wow.
Oh my god!
That's shocking.
No, but you know,
yeah, that is pretty low.
Not so many people expected the two cars to DNF, so it makes sense.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I guess that's a fair point too, because you have like signs, you have so many drivers that could actually be in that position. So I can see maybe why, but still, I am a little surprised.
All right. Well, let's move on. We go to Albon on P7, and I think it's Sam's turn, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it is.
Okay, I'm gonna go with 21.
21. I'm going lower. I'm going to go with 12.
And that means that Sam, you can officially not win it anymore, because that's a point for Tracy. It's 6-1 already.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it was
Tracy.
It was only half of that. Actually,
no. I think anyone that's listening will be very happy that you've won, so they don't have to hear the Canadian anthem again.
Yes, it's, we're definitely not going
to
turn that on.
It would be nice
to
hear your national anthem. No.
Getting back to Albon, it was even still half the people that you said, Tracy. You went with 12. It was 6 people that had Albon on P7. I'm going to mention who those people were, because it's not that many. So we had Cecilia Tomasera from Italy. We had Sanne Terlin from the Netherlands. Wilhelm Ifuula from Namibia. Farouk Weyache from Thailand. We had Rawat Kashmar from Lebanon, and Anastasis Nikolaou from Greece. Those were the 6 people that put Albon on P7. So congratulations to them. That scored them the full 6 points that Albon scored. And that brings us to the next Williams on P8, Colapinto. And this one's for you, Tracy, first.
I'll go with 1 person.
You know what? That's a pretty good guess. I am going to go with nobody.
Mm-hmm. Means there's another point going to Tracy, because there was a few more, actually. It was 5 people still.
5 people. Wow.
Okay.
It has funds.
Yeah. Now my question is, how many out of those 5 people you think were from Argentina?
All of them.
that's a very good, because I mean, that would make sense. I would probably put them there too if that was me. So. I'm going to say 4.
No, it was 3 people, actually. Just as I did with Albon, I'm going to read them all out loud, ordered by racing number. So, Matteo Pucci from Argentina, Simon Lugon-Riva from Poland, James Mulbeck from Canada, and Jorge Cuello and Nahuel Aguilar from both from Argentina. All of those 5 people scored the 4 points that that Colapinto scored.
Nice,
very nice, and it was the right choice to make, wasn't it?
Yeah,
was indeed. So even though Sam, you can't win it anymore, let's continue and go to P9 Hamilton. Although actually, if I'm not mistaken, this one is for Sam. So how many people had Hamilton on that spot?
I'm going to say quite a few. I'm going to say 150.
I'm going to say around 85.
Yeah, from your reaction, Tracy, I could hear that you were that you felt that was slightly high for Hamilton. It was slightly high, Sam. There was only 12 people who went with Hamilton on P9.
12.
Oh, okay.
Which brings us to another interesting one, Biermann on P10.
I'd go with more people. I'd go with around 26.
Yeah, I feel like there is going to be quite a few people that are going to put him there. So I'm going to go, I don't know, because you're close to the number that I would have gone with too. So I'm going to say 27.
That's the right direction to go, but it was many, many more people actually that went with Behrman. Yeah.
Oh,
The P10 is like the, I don't know, like people consider it the bonus point, I guess, and they just put somebody on. And if there's a different driver on the grid that weekend, it seems like everybody hurries to go with that driver. It was 178 people who had put in Behrman on P10. And I double checked it.
Wow.
It's I felt it was quite a lot.
Well, it was quite a lot, but they all, again, similarly to Colapinto, they all made the right decision. They were right.
We were right.
Sam, last one, fastest lap. Norris.
I'm going to go with 201.
I'm going for a much higher number. I'm going to go with around 474.
400? How many did you say?
474.
For 1 second there, when you said 470, I thought you were going to say the exact right number. It was 417. But still, that brings you very close to the number. And that brings you to a final point tally of 9 points. And you leave Sam standing in the shadow with only two.
I wish I'd met.
Yes, well, look, I mean... Tracy, you're very good at this. This is the second time, and every time you're actually very close to what the result is. So definitely well deserved.
Thank you. They need to take me to a casino somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's true. We were talking about that after a previous race. I think you were on in Silverstone, no? With Hamilton win, if I'm not mistaken. And I think we were talking about casinos back then as well. very good result for you indeed, and hope you can repeat that in predicting Singapore. That's coming up for next weekend already. We're going into another race week, and I think a very exciting one. Like I was saying slightly earlier in the podcast, I think it might be a track that that might suit the Ferrari, Sam, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, with the strength recently of the Ferrari, it's going to be really exciting. They're going to come in, I believe, as definitely a strong team. But Singapore is what a thrilling race. It's always exciting. And I mean, it is also one of the most physically grueling races as well. And I have no doubts that that's going to play also a big part.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and I think qualifying is, I might be wrong, but I think I heard somewhere that statistically the driver getting pole in Singapore even wins the race more often than they do in Monaco. Of course, it's not been on the calendar as long as Monaco has been, but it sort of paints a picture. I'm not 100% sure actually if that's true, but I have to look that up. But in any way, I think it's pretty clear that qualifying is very, very important in Singapore. It's not the easiest track to overtake. So I think, let's see what's going to happen. Like we were just saying, I think it's becoming extremely difficult to predict in the last couple of, in this section of the season. So that's going to be fun. I have no idea what to go with, to be honest with you.
Yeah, me too. Hard to predict these days.
Clue.
So hard.
I mean, at this point, I feel like you could put Colapinto in P5, and that would be a logical choice, because really anything goes at this point.
All right, I'll keep you to that.
I think the major strategy for Singapore will be undercutting.
Very good point. Yes, undercutting will play a huge factor. I don't doubt that. But yeah, I think it's going to be exciting. We can also see, like, will maybe Red Bull work out the kinks a little bit so that we'd see a stronger performance? Is Perez going to bounce back? Are we going to see McLaren strong? We're still after the papaya rules situation. Is that going to be a factor depending on the qualifying result? There's a lot of questions there. Is Mercedes going to find more pace? Is Hamilton going to come back strong after he's had a few hiccups in the last several races? So many questions.
Is Stake ever going to score any points?
Very good question. Is
that's a very good, yeah, that's the most important one of all.
When are they finally winning a point? But I think with Stake, I might not be surprised if they finish this season without any points.
Yeah, we were actually talking about that during last podcast. I think I was putting the question to Sam and to Friso at that time if they think that they would still score a point, but it's starting to seem less and less likely. I agree. I would also not really expect them to score any.
Unfortunately, at this point, I think I would be more surprised if they did score a point as opposed to if they didn't.
Same.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, yeah.
Well, Tracy, thank you once again for joining us. It's been a pleasure as always. So glad to have you on to hear your thoughts and unfortunately lose. But I mean, like I said, fortunately for probably most people, they don't have to listen to the Canadian national anthem, and you crushed it this weekend.
Thank you so much for having me again. This is for my Kenyans. Enjoy the national anthem and everybody else will be listening. Yeah, thank you so much. This was fun.
Cheers. Well, see you next time. And well, hope you guys listen again after the race in Singapore.
Yes, to Singapore we go.